Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we? Part 2 of Chapter 3. Trist, the quest begins. By the time he reached home, he was breathing normally again, and without pain, and his limp had left him. Sounds of music greeted him as he entered the home he shared with the three other members of the Deadly Troubadours. Alexander, one of his troop mates, lazily strummed his lute while relaxing on an overstuffed couch.
"Where have you been, then?" the musician asked.
"Fetching us a trophy," Demetrius answered, placing the hard-won helmet on the mantel. He stepped back and admired how the crimson would draw the eyes of future guests.
"Nice that," Alexander, master of song, approved.
The music suddenly came to a halt.
"You are aware you stink of rotting fish."
"Yes."
"All right, then."
And the music resumed. A second later, the music stopped again.
"Why do you stink of rotting fish?"
"The answer to that, my dear fellow, lies in the tale of the Crimson Helm." Demetrius did his best to finish in a captivating flourish. Alexander merely blinked at him, unimpressed by his display of showmanship.
"The thing is, you smell very much bad. I find myself little caring about the hearing of your tale, and more hoping you would remove yourself to the baths."
"Oh, it can't be that bad. Quit being such a whiner," Demetrius said, while plopping himself down onto one of the vacant lounges. The door to the far room, which was currently occupied by Talbert, burst open.
"What in the name of all that is holy smells like Val's own arsehole?"
"That would be Demetrius," offered Alexander, who was having a hard time of plucking the right notes with his eyes watering so ferociously.
"What are you doing on the sofa? You'll get your stink all over it and we'll have to toss it out."
"Fine, fine," Demetrius said, rising from his seat. "But don't you want to hear my rousing tale of adventure?"
"No.
I want you to go clean off that repulsive smell before we are forced to move."
"It isn't that bad," grumped Demetrius, who was quickly growing suspicious that his troop mates were trying to diminish his heroic feat. He noticed Kestra, who had slinked into the room shortly after Talbert, and he walked over to her, arms outstretched for an embrace.
"Kestra, our angel of goodness, you want to hear my story, don't you?
Tate, I swear that if you touch me before cleaning yourself, I will have no choice but to kill you." She delivered the line with such a flatness of voice that Demetrius was not certain if she was jesting. However, he decided that in this situation, his best course of action would be to give in.
"Fine, fine. I see that even triumphant I am set upon by my peers. I shall retreat to the baths, but once I return, you shall listen to my tale in full." With that, he exited their little burrow and headed forth to cleanse himself of the scent of fish bathing in the afternoon sun. Demetrius's frustration with his troop mates lessened as he meandered through the city streets, slowly making his way to the public baths. He noticed that the townspeople he passed by took to giving inquisitive sniffs and checking their boots for hidden refuse. More than one passerby gave him a dirty look, and there were several disgusted glances. One shriveled woman even used a warding gesture designed to keep away evil spirits at him. That was what convinced him that his friends were not merely trying to spoil his good mood. It was also what convinced him that his clothes were done for. He dumped them in the first depository he could find and took refuge that in this sweltering weather he would not be the only one making his way through the streets dressed only in underclothes. Although it did get him some unwelcome glances of a different type, and even two questionable offers that were quickly rescinded when the odor haunting him struck. It was in the baths while he was soaping his head for the third time and silently rehearsing his story that he realized that he had heard of no other troops boast of stealing a helm from the Scarlets. In fact, ever since the Scarlets had become the main guard of Trist, troop boasting had been drastically reduced. Most stories now revolved around dramatic escapes rather than in actual achievements. This could be the first true victory against the Scarlets. If he was correct, that meant two things. A great increase in esteem for his crew and, perhaps the better news, they would likely drink free this night. Demetrius hurried his scrubbings and rushed back to the burrow. Night was coming and they would need to prepare.
He presented his notions to the group at large. Initially, there was dissent, especially from Talbert, who felt that this would only result in various troops competing and ass-wagging at the Scarlets, and that would be to no one's benefit. But he had to admit that recently the atmosphere had been too subdued, and even depressed at meets, and that this could be the thing to bring back what for them was civic pride. Once there was unanimous agreement between the four of them, it was further decided that this would be their night to shine. They each dressed in their finest. Demetrius wore a black shirt and black pants, both accented with silver buttons. To add the right amount of flair, he added a half cape of brilliant red. He wanted to wear the helm as they paraded through the streets to the meet, but Kestra used her feminine wiles to convince him otherwise. "Don't be fucking stupid and put the thing in a bag already." As for her dress, she elected for thick and sturdy boots, green trousers, gloves with iron studs on the knuckles, and a faded brown leather-reinforced doublet. When Demetrius suggested that she put on a dress in celebration, she claimed she had no interest in playing the damsel and countered that if he was so interested in celebration, that perhaps he should sport the dress. Talbert chose a blue tabard on which was embossed a silver cross and striped black and silver pantaloons stuffed into thigh-high black boots. Alexander opted for his usual long coat of multicolored patches, the signifier of his trade. Beneath that, he wore a shirt of smoky gray, cinched at the neck by a white lace cravat. His pants were black, and his shoes, he proudly proclaimed, were genuine shark skin. That he brought his mandolin with him should not need mentioning. Alec would just as soon leave an ear or finger behind as he would his instrument. After all, he was master of song. They made a motley group, but they were true to themselves and true to each other. Of one mind, they set out to the meet in order to become the envy of the troops of the Order of Free Thinkers. In a city the size of Trist, it went without saying that there were various guilds and orders. Guilds of tinkers and tailors and bakers and any other service that could be imagined openly proclaimed their existence and actively sought new members and used their influence and standing to attract customers. There were orders of former soldiers and guards that served as the standing negotiators for the current troops. After all, being a guard or soldier was still considered to be a noble and selfless profession. For them to bicker over coin would be unseemly. However, former members, using their influence to strong-arm out the best deals and in return receive a taste of the increased wages, was something else entirely. That the Scarlets truly did find their profession to be a calling and had little interest in the conniving schemes of the Order of Retired Tristian Guards was rather distressing to the members' order who had retired before the Guards had been repurposed into the Scarlets. But, in addition to all the publicly known and recorded orders and guilds, there were also those that shied away from prying eyes, as their existence would not be looked upon so favorably. Most feared was the Order of Secrets, which united the darker of the alchemist guilds with the guilds of assassins, and a guild that explored the depths of both shadow and blood magic. On the complete opposite side of the spectrum, and likely the most tolerated of the illicit orders, was the Order of Free Thinkers. In many ways, the Free Thinkers was simply a confederation of bands of thieves and cutpurses. It was true enough that many of the associated troops made their way in life by relieving other citizens of their coin and other worldly possessions. However, the Order of Free Thinkers further aspired to be pranksters, and inspired ones at that. Simple acts of mischief were looked down upon. To be inspired, a prank needed to have both a proper target and a proper technique. If a well-to-do coinlender is planning a day of private bathing for the upper crust during the hottest month of the summer droughts, then any fool can throw eggs at the guests as they arrive. It takes a cunning mind to calculate the proper amount of water-soluble skins needed to cover the many balls of quick dye, so that halfway through the evening, when almost all of the attendees are soaking, the last of the skins dissolves away, allowing the dye to disperse throughout the pools, resulting in an upper crust the shade of blueberries for the next week. Some would argue it would be better for the freethinkers to act as characters out of legend and steal away the water for the enjoyment of the poor. Others would argue that the city gains more from a week of laughter than a short dip in tepid water. So it was that the Order of Free Thinkers considered themselves the humility of the city, if not exactly the conscience. The various members of guilds increased in esteem and rank by pulling off such pranks and daring feats. In many ways, it all boiled down to a pissing contest between guilds, with the order masters holding the measuring stick. But unless the rivalry between certain guilds was especially bitter, it was a good-natured contest. Unfortunately, since the coming of the Scarlets, there had been little reason for boasting, as most of the usual pranks and schemes had been prevented, and several of the guilds that had got by through petty larceny had been clapped in irons by the all-too-efficient Scarlets. The self-titled Deadly Troubadours counted themselves fortunate. They had an actual master of song in residence to help them make it through this lean time, while they were trying to re-find their footing. So it was that the Deadly Troubadours anticipated much rejoicing at the displaying of the helmet. In truth, it was not so great a feat, and Demetrius would easily admit to his guild, if not the order at large, that he had only managed the barest of escapes. But it was also the first time that a member of the order had not only escaped the clutches of the Scarlets, but had escaped with the upper hand, and that was something that deserved celebrating. But the first step would be to find the meat. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening. Deadly Troubadours will soon be available as an ebook from most ebook retailers. If you want to hear more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at deadlytroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available at iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review it. And while you're there, why not check out my other podcasts, such as Comics League International and the show I co-host, Living Japan. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com. Once again, thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in next week for the continuing adventures of The Deadly Troubadours.